This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. One day before Iowa caucuses, we have new polls, a new senator from Mississippi, a new talk of a third party. Time for another edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us. He's got a New Year's bonus for us. Not one, but two trivia questions this week. Going to have to wait a little bit for that. In just a moment, we're going to talk with the head of the Des Moines Register's Iowa poll, which puts Barack Obama and Mike Huckabee at the head of their respective classes, plus the Huckabee attack ad that wasn't, the appointment of Trent Lott's successor, TV debates for just the top four. And a bit later in the show, we'll focus on a meeting in Oklahoma next week that some interpret as an effort to generate a nonpartisan independent campaign, or in other words, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, are you ready for a militantly moderate third-party presidential candidate? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, it's the first day at work for many this new year. Got a little cough? We'll tell you how sick is too sick to clock in. And we've got an email challenge for you. Ever elevated a sniffle to the full-blown flu? Practiced your sore throat before you called the boss? Confess. We'll forgive you. The email address is talk@npr.org. But first, the political junkie, Ken Rudin, is with us here in Studio 3A. Happy New Year, Ken.
And to you too, Neil.
And we have to begin in Iowa, where most of the polls say it's a three-way toss-up on the Democratic side and closer than it was between the two top Republicans.
Well, on the Democratic side, we've been saying that for months. It's been Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, and whatever iteration of those three, and nothing has changed. Of course, the whole thing is, and we've said this over and over again, is turnout, because a caucus is not the same as a primary. You have to be really dedicated to go out, and all the candidates are really trying to get out that caucus vote at the last day today. With, matter of fact, rallies tonight at 9:30, 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. tonight.
And just a reminder, on the Democratic side, this can take a couple of hours.
It could, only because on the Republican side, it's basically a straight straw poll that a Republican voter would go into a caucus site and vote for Smith or Jones or whatever candidate he or she prefers. Whereas on the Democratic side, you need to have some kind of a math degree to figure out what happens. Because if candidate Smith doesn't get 15% at an individual precinct caucus, that the supporters of that candidate could decide to merge with another candidate to make that candidate viable in that caucus. That's what Dennis Kucinich announced yesterday, that if in any event that he is not a precinct where his supporters are not viable, he will have some kind of a coalition with Obama's supporters to raise their stakes.
And why is it that in Iowa, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have different rules for an event they call the same thing that happens on the same day?
Good question, although why is Iowa having a caucus and everybody else seems to have primaries? But Iowa's different. They've been on the first on the calendar since 1972. And, you know, we've been talking on this program for so long that this process is going on for so long, takes forever, and yet it's here already. And somehow you wonder how long it will last after Iowa, because there's a new, you know, there are debates this Saturday and Sunday, and there's a new criteria for these debates that if you don't finish in the top four in Iowa, and if you don't have 5% of the vote nationwide in the polls, you will not be included in this weekend's debates. And that could hurt candidates who have so much riding on the Iowa caucuses.
Well, particularly, you see in the new Iowa poll that was published earlier this week that Ron Paul, given very little chance earlier in the campaign, is now suddenly tied for fourth on the Republican side with Fred Thompson, who is getting less and less credit as he goes along. So this is very important.
Absolutely very important. It's also fascinating to watch the media perception about the voter perception of these candidates all along. I mean, we dismissed Mike Huckabee a long time ago, and yet he's obviously fighting for the lead in Iowa. Ron Paul has been dismissed as an internet fad for the longest time, yet he's raised a ton of money, $20 million. I mean, so many candidates wish that they had that money. So again, our perceptions have really been all over the map.
Well, we mentioned that most of the polls suggested that it's a three-way tie virtually on the Democratic side and that it's a little bit narrower on the Republican side. One poll is different. That's the Iowa poll, which is conducted for the Des Moines Register. Ann Selzer is president of Selzer & Company, a research and polling firm that conducts that poll. And she joins us from our studios in Des Moines. Nice to speak with you again. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And I guess one of the questions is, why is it, do you think, your poll has long been held out as the gold standard in Iowa, notoriously a very difficult place to poll, but why is it that your poll seems to be out of whack with the other polls, or are they out of whack with you?
Well, because the Iowa caucuses are so notoriously difficult to poll, there are just a variety of approaches that pollsters take. We have a method that we stuck with that worked for us in 2004. We were the only poll to get the candidates in the right rank order. So we stuck with that poll. And there are all sorts of minute ways that polls differ. We're polling over the holidays. That may add some volatility to it. We're comfortable with what we're reporting, but we are sort of sitting out there. You're right.
Yeah, you're reporting Barack Obama 7 points, in other words, outside of the margin of error in front of both Hillary Clinton and John Edwards.
Just on the cusp of the margin of error.
And on the Republican side, Mike Huckabee holding on virtually the same lead he had in November.
Right. And this is where turnout is going to play such a crucial role. And I know you've talked about that before. It's one of the ways that the straw poll in the summer helps give a candidate a dry run at getting their supporters out to a particular place at a particular time and voting the way that they wish for them to vote. So that really puts Romney in a pretty good place. Huckabee did well in the straw poll as well. But he's had less of a ground game going here. He just has less money, less organization. So we'll see what happens on the Republican side.
And does it matter a lot if the turnout, for example, on the Democratic side is 150,000 or 200,000?
Well, that's just a huge difference. That's a tsunami of new first-time caucusgoers showing up. In 2004, 45% were first-time caucusgoers. Our poll suggested that it's even going to be higher this year. But yes, that would be one additional way this could be a historic caucus.
Lots of ways for it to be an historic caucus. As you look ahead to tomorrow, it is tomorrow night after all, are a lot of people still undecided in both parties?
You know, there were about 6% in our poll who said they didn't have a first choice. This is on the Democratic side. And of the people who had a first choice or someone they were leaning toward, there was still about 1 in 3 of that group who said they could still be persuaded to vote for someone else. And anecdotally, you just hear such rich sort of situations that voters are grappling with. A friend of mine said, well, I've downloaded all of their issues positions, I've studied them, and I've narrowed it down to 4. You know, there's an embarrassment of riches, they think, on the Democratic side. There are so many candidates with qualifications, with interesting positions. So there's really, and the way the caucus system works, it almost encourages you not to make up your mind all that fast.
And Ken mentioned the debate that's going to be held this weekend, where only the top 4 will make it. The top 4 is determined by TV networks, but it includes their formula, includes how people finish in Iowa. And your poll shows John McCain, who hasn't really much campaigned in Iowa, surging into third place.
That's right. He sort of has risen out of the dust. He got the endorsement of the Des Moines Register, and that may have caused some Republicans to say, you know what, I didn't think he had a chance, but as I look at the rest of these candidates, I'm just not sure I trust them with my vote. That's the word I keep hearing, that I don't necessarily agree with McCain on all the issues, but I trust he's going to tell me what he thinks, and I won't have to guess about it.
And the other person, of course, we mentioned Ron Paul as moving into a fourth-place tie with Fred Thompson. On the Democratic side, we know who are the 3 on top. Who might finish 4th, do you think?
Well, if the poll is accurate, it would be Bill Richardson. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Biden or Dodd get some traction and challenge that position, really. Down at the fourth-place position, that's anybody's game.
Hmm. And at this point, having made this last poll, put it in the newspapers, what do you do, sit back and cross your fingers?
Well, this is the time that it's good to get out of town if you can. It's the time for pollsters to sit on their hands, explain what it is that they've done, if that can be enlightening, and then just shut up. Just wait for caucus night, and we'll find out how things look.
We're talking with Ann Selzer, the president of Selzer & Company, the research and polling firm that conducts the Des Moines Register's Iowa poll. Of course, Ken Rudin is here with us, the political junkie. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk at npr.org. And Erica's on the line. Erica calling us from Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi. Not having ever lived in Iowa, I'm fascinated and completely confused by particularly the Democratic caucus procedure. And I wanted to know, are they allowed to televise a caucus, or at least is there any good internet site that can kind of explain it in all gory detail?
Ken Rudin is going to leap into this conversation right now, because isn't there a good caucus explainer at the NPR website?
Well, I believe so. There's an overweight fellow who works for NPR who gives you a little tour of the Iowa caucus and the history. but there's also something interesting, too, that it's my understanding that there are some mini cameras that, I don't know if it's YouTube or Facebook or those kind of folks who are sending reporters into caucus sites with some kind of amateurish video, which we've never seen before. But
like a caucus cam or something.
A caucus cam.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Well, good luck with that.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Erica. And I just want one more item on Iowa, and that is, of course, the ad that wasn't. Mike Huckabee called a news conference to announce that he was pulling an advertisement and then played it.
I know that some of you are saying that, well, did you really have an ad? I want to show you the ad. You'll get a chance to find out exactly what we're doing. No, I want you to see it. This is what we plan to do.
Romney's record? Over $700 million in new taxes. Left office with a deficit. No executions. Supported gun control. And Romney's government-mandated health plan provided a $50 copay for abortion.
If a man's dishonest to obtain a job, he'll be dishonest on the job. Iowans deserve better.
And Ken Rudin, very quickly, you heard the laughter in the room as reporters.
Those are reporters, right. That's not the Jay Leno show, which Huckabee will be on tonight. Those are reporters. But there is a big debate inside the Huckabee campaign about how far to go negative. He's always been portrayed as this good guy kind of campaigner. But the fact that his poll numbers have diminished in the wake of nonstop attacks by the Mitt Romney campaign, there was a debate in the Huckabee campaign about whether to fire back or not. And I think that ambivalence was shown at the press conference.
And, of course, by not playing the ad, but playing it, you got a lot of coverage of the ad. Ann Selzer, thanks very much, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Ann Selzer of the Des Moines Register's Iowa poll. We'll be back with more and talking about that talk of a third party with one of the people who's going to be attending that meeting in Oklahoma City on Monday, so stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We've got the political junkie here. It's one day before the Iowa caucuses, and we're all watching candidates race to the finish, and it's time for our trivia question. And Ken, this focuses on the subject we're going to be focusing on in this next segment.
Yes, we're talking about third-party candidates, and of course we know about, you know, George Wallace and Strom Thurmond and all the folks in the faraway past who have run for president, but who was the last independent or third-party candidate to receive an electoral vote?
A vote in the Electoral College for a third-party or independent candidate. All right, give us a call, 800-989-8255, zap us an email, talk@npr.org. You can also send email to that address or call that telephone number. On this question, are you ready for a third-party presidential candidate? Are you ready for one who would be from the militant moderate school, someone who's campaigning on too much partisanship in politics and that both parties are wrong, somebody in the center? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Ken, the reason for all this discussion is a meeting to be held in, of all places, Oklahoma on Monday.
Oklahoma University, Monday being the day before the New Hampshire primary. It's organized by David Boren, who is the president of Oklahoma University.
A former Democratic senator from
Oklahoma.
And
governor, right, who's always been kind of like the maverick kind of Democrat, a conservative back home when he was in the Senate, but he's been shying away from the party line since he left the Senate. And there are other people also, like Chuck Hagel, who's also been shying away from the Republican Party line.
The current senator from Nebraska.
Who's retiring this year, quite some time now he's been shying away from the line, especially on Iraq. So you have Boren, you have Hagel. Now you have others less mavericks. I mean, you have Christy Todd Whitman, the former governor of New Jersey. You have Bob Graham, the former senator from Florida. Bill Brock, the former Republican national chairman, senator from Tennessee. Those people who will be there, too. But there are
Sam Nunn, reformer Democrat from Georgia.
But again, also those who have not been following the party line. And again, given the fact that a lot of speculation on Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, given the fact that he's already said, or his people have said, that he has up to as much as $500 million to spend
at the drop of a hat, his own money.
Exactly. A very big hat, a very big wallet that could certainly shake up everything.
And the reason the people who are attending this meeting and organized this meeting said, look, we didn't organize this to draft Bloomberg for a third party run. We're here to talk about how to get the partisanship out of politics.
Well, I think that's true. I don't think they're giving you a line. I think they're really absolutely true about that, that they feel that there is so much ugly rhetoric on both sides. We've seen it during the debates. We've seen it during the ads and the campaign speeches. But hopefully they feel that they could right the ship of the two parties before they even consider a third party.
And the reason Bloomberg is mentioned for this, well, first of all, he had brooded the idea himself. And second of all, like the last person to make a serious third party bid, Ross Perot, he can finance the campaign by himself.
And the fact that he made a very public switching of parties from you know, he began as a Democrat. He was elected as a Republican, a two-term Republican mayor of New York. Last June, he made the point of changing his party affiliation from Republican to Independent. And from that moment on, even before that, but from that moment on, people said, there's something more here than just changing party affiliation. There's probably a White House bid down the line.
So are you ready for a third party for a different presidential choice? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Dennis is on the line with us. Dennis calling from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi.
Hi.
I am so ready for a third party, and the reason is very simple. The two parties say what they think they have to say to get elected, whether it's religion, whether it's abortion, or whether it's immigration. They say what they do to get people to elect them, and talk is too cheap. What I want to see is a candidate who will govern by the rule of law and be nice to everybody. What you believe in your personal life about going to heaven and hell and all that stuff shouldn't make any difference whatsoever in how you govern. Everybody has the right to their private religion and so on, and even the atheists. I'd rather have a nice atheist than a really mean Christian. So the point is, let's get a candidate who will govern everybody fairly by the rule of law and not by what they think in their personal beliefs.
And why do you think a third party or independent candidate would be more likely to be that person than a Republican or a Democrat?
Because the two existing parties have to mobilize their base, and their bases are way too far from the center. All my friends in the far left and my friends in the far right, they hate each other. I don't hate anybody. I just want people to be fair. And the two existing big parties, they have to fall back on their bases to get elected instead of
to get nominated.
Have a new base.
Yeah.
Have a new base of the people in the middle, the radical majority in the middle who are really pretty moderate.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
You betcha.
You know, Neil, one thing about that, though, I mean, a lot of people will say that Michael Bloomberg is not really in the middle. He supports gay marriage. He's a very strong proponent of gun control. He's very anti-gun, in fact, and he supports abortion rights. So there are some conservatives say, well, look, if you're looking for somebody in the middle, Michael Bloomberg may not be that person.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email. This is from Walter in Syracuse, New York. I would absolutely welcome a militantly moderate party. Last week, the RNC called me and tried to scare me about Hillary Clinton as president and government-run health care. I find Mark Huckabee's overt religious pitch at least as scary. Please run, Mr. Bloomberg. My kids, both of whom who would be new voters, feel the same way. There don't seem to be any moderates in the race. Democrats are too left. Republicans sound just plain stupid on the deficit and social issues. Anyone care to deal with Medicare, Social Security? Well, we don't know if Mr. Bloomberg is ready to deal with any of that stuff.
No, but again, he certainly has the money to whatever he decides to do, he can pay for it. One other person we should not forget is Ron Paul. He says he has no intention to run as a fourth party. He was the Libertarian Party nominee in 1988. He has a ton of money. His supporters say, look, you know, we're not going to, if he loses the Republican nomination, we're not finished with him. And I have a feeling that you may see him as a possible third or fourth party candidate as well.
As we mentioned, this meeting in Oklahoma City is being held on Monday. And among those in attendance is former New Jersey Governor Christy Todd Whitman, a Republican. And she joins us now on the line from Florida. And Governor Whitman, it's good of you to be with us again on Talk of the Nation.
No problem. It's good to talk to you again.
And as we've been talking about, and as you've talked about too, somehow this meeting in Oklahoma City has gotten described as an attempt to form a third party.
Yes, I know, and it's been interesting to say the least to hear that, because this started back when David Bourne and I actually are on a board together, and we've been talking about our concerns about what's happened in the political process and the breakdown of good public policy in Washington because of the partisanship. And David suggested getting together some people who have been in elective office, who have shown an ability to be partisan, but work across party lines and get things done. And I thought that was a good idea, and he put it together. It was never about starting a third party. It's not about a draft Bloomberg. It was about how do we get the two parties to recognize that the people in this country in general want action. We don't want every issue to be looked at as a partisan political issue, but looked at from the policy perspective. And we need to see more positive action out of Washington.
Well, one question is, first of all, how would you accomplish that very difficult goal? The last president we elected said he was a uniter, not a divider. That didn't work out so well.
Well, that's the reason for getting together people who've had as much experience as those who have said they would come to this particular gathering. And talk about it. What we hope to do was to come out with perhaps a policy statement talking about the issues that we feel are important, to urge the candidates not to engage in the very divisive personal types of campaigns we've seen in the past that make it so difficult to govern after you get in office when you've been torn apart by all other sides. It's hard to get together afterwards, and we need to start to overcome that. Who knows what's going to come out of it? I mean, the intent was to get people together who have shown that they are recognized as partisans, but who say there's something not functioning now. This is different. I mean, I can't speak to it being, I mean, I can as I've watched it in Washington, but I'm not from Washington. I was a governor. And governors tend to be more bipartisan because we just got to deliver on a regular basis to everybody in the state. But I've watched what's happened in Washington and worked with Washington, and I think it's much worse today than it's been in the past. But the rest of the group, save a few exceptions, are people who have actually served and served in positions of leadership in Washington, and they're saying the system's broken now, and we've got to get people back to talking to one another. Compromise is not a dirty word. If that's what's needed to get good legislation through, we're supposed to be serving the people, not our parties all the time.
Yet, on an issue like immigration, very important issue to an awful lot of people, an important issue in a lot of different ways, there is such passion on this. A compromise bill that was bipartisan bill did not get it through this last Congress. And then we see campaigning on this issue. If you're on one side of the issue, the other side denounces you as a racist. If you're on the other side, you're not a patriot.
Well, that's precisely the problem. Every issue today is framed in these moralistic terms, which makes it very difficult to get together, because if I hold a position and I believe it's the moral position, that makes, and you're opposite, you hold a different position than me, that in my mind makes you immoral. You have an immoral position, and that is not conducive to getting good policy done. This is the kind of conundrum that we've got to address, and that was the purpose, and that is the purpose behind holding this meeting this weekend.
And if it turned out to be a meeting about forming a third party to address this situation, if we had a good bipartisan president, we could solve this issue. Would you be part of the meeting?
Well, I'm not interested in starting a third party. I am working as a co-chair of the Republican Leadership Council to change the Republican Party from the inside out and start at the grassroots level to get us back to the point where we can disagree without being disagreeable. We don't have to hate one another because we're on opposite sides of any one particular issue, and get back to the basic concerns that have always motivated the party. And that's where my intent is. Who knows how things are going to play out in the future, but I intend to stay within the Republican Party. That's the way I'm looking at it.
But Governor Whitman, this meeting comes as both parties are desperately either trying to win the White House or retain the White House. Don't you feel, I mean, given the fact that the purpose of the Republican Party, the purpose of the Democratic Party is to make life as unbearable for the opposite side as possible, and given the fact that the campaign is really getting underway right now, do you really expect anybody to come away with this kind of a meeting satisfied or a sense of any kind of accomplishment?
Well, the purpose of elective office is to serve the people. And that's what we've got to get back to. Sure, we've always had partisanship. We've always had parties. We've had hard-fought campaigns, and we've had divisiveness. That's no question. It's been our history since the very beginning, and at least we don't have senators bashing one another over the head with canes anymore. But it's gotten to the point where you have some pretty sophisticated people who have said that they want to attend this meeting because they're concerned. You have issues like organizations like Unity 08 coming together because people are concerned that it's now gotten to the point where we're just not getting the kind of solutions that we need in this country to really solve the problems that we face. And the purpose of this meeting is to try to figure out, is there a way to break this? Is it too late? I mean, I don't think it's too late. I happen to believe in our two-party system, and we can agree to disagree, but we don't, and we haven't in the past, hated one another. I will tell you, as a governor, I used to go to NGA meetings. I didn't know when I first got there I mean, you did know, but it didn't matter who was a Republican or a Democrat. You'd talk together, you'd share ideas. Sure, when it came to campaigning, you'd maybe on the other side, but you didn't vilify your opponent. You just disagreed with them, and you disagreed with them on issues. But for the important things that needed to get done for the public, you could come together, share information, share good ideas, and even work together to get things done.
Governor Whitman, have a good trip to Oklahoma City.
Okay.
And Happy New Year to you.
Take care, and Happy New Year to you.
Christy Todd Whitman, bye. Former Republican governor of New Jersey, former head of the Environmental Protection Agency under President Bush, speaking with us from Florida. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is John. John calling us from Napa in California.
Yeah, hi. On the trivia question, I'm going to guess Ross Perot.
Ross Perot. Did Ross Perot get an electoral vote?
He did not. He got 19 million votes in 1992. He got 8 million votes in 1996. Matter of fact, his 19 million votes were the most of any independent or third-party candidate in history, but not a single electoral vote.
All right, but I have a thought about the third parties. And I think that they tend to hurt the Democrat nominee. I'm a registered Democrat, and I still haven't forgiven now Ralph Nader for what I see is basically ensuring that Al Gore didn't win the election in 00. And I just shudder and think of how much different our history would have been were Gore president than with the what I can see is the disaster of the 8 years of Bush.
And here we have an email from David taking just the opposite point of view. Can you discuss how third-party candidacy of Mr. Bloomberg would tremendously benefit Democrats and likewise tremendously hurt Republicans in exactly the same way that Ross Perot allowed Clinton to beat Bush in 1992? And, Ken Rudin, is there any way to tell which way this would break if it happened?
Well, my gut tells me that Bloomberg, even though he was nominally a Republican mayor, the fact that he's you know, pro-gay marriage, pro-choice, pro-gun control, he would cut into the Democratic vote, assuming the Republican nominee were not Rudy Giuliani, somebody who would be very conservative.
All right. John, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Here's some more trivia suggestions from Ian. John Edwards, he did get one electoral vote in 2004, I believe, from a North or South Carolina elector?
The question is the last third party or independent, obviously John Edwards ran for vice president. Lloyd Benson also in 1988, there was a disgruntled West Virginia elector who didn't like Michael Dukakis, voted for Lloyd Benson. But I'm looking for a third party or independent presidential candidate, the last one to get an electoral vote.
Stephen sends an email, Harry Byrd, 1960.
Harry Byrd did get an electoral vote, but somebody more recent than Harry Byrd.
And here's one from Jim, John Tomey, so maybe Jim Tomey's brother, Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt was a third. Matter of fact, he outdid the Republican nominee, President William Howard Taft, but that was, as you well remember, 1912, someone much more recent than that.
John Anderson in 1980, and he's already been out recent.
He's over 5 million votes, not a single electoral vote.
In 1976, there was a maverick elector from Minnesota who voted for Ronald Reagan, even though he was no longer running and was not an independent. But I don't think that's who you mean.
Correct.
I think the answer you want is George Wallace in 1968, who was running mate Curtis LeMay, won several southern states.
Yes, he won many electoral votes, but he's not the most recent.
From Leah, Bob La Follette.
Well, Fighting Bob did run in 1916 as a progressive party, Bull Moose party successor to Teddy Roosevelt, but someone more, that's Neil Conan's lifetime, it's more in Ken Rudin's lifetime.
And Richard Harris from Washington suggests Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader did not get an electoral vote.
Who did?
The answer is John Hospers, who's the Libertarian Party candidate in 1972, a disgruntled Nixon elector from Virginia, gave one electoral vote to John Hospers. Even though he got like 3,000 votes nationwide, he did get an electoral vote.
Well, we have just a little bit of time left before we have to let you go, Ken. There is to be a new senator from Mississippi to replace Trent Lott.
Roger Wicker, a conservative congressman who was elected in the Gingrich Republican sweep of 1994, Governor Haley Barbour, as is right, was the named successor, and he named Roger Wicker. The question is, the Republicans want to hold the election next November. Democrats want it sooner, so this guy will not have new seniority.
And Trent Lott said health played no part in his decision. Regrettably, Tom Lantos, the longtime congressman, Democrat from California, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, announced today that he has cancer of the esophagus and will not seek re-election. Tom Lantos will certainly be missed in Washington, D.C.
Very strong on foreign affairs, not the favorite of many liberals around the country, but one of the few Democrats who really was a real hawk on foreign affairs.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much.
Good luck in Iowa.
We'll be back on Friday with an NPR News special at this hour on the results in Iowa, so tune in for that. Ken Rudin, of course, will be with us. We're sorry about that, but we'll do better next time. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation. Coming up, if you've woken up with a sore throat, stuffy nose, body aches, how do you know if you're too sick to wade through those holiday emails? We'll let you know how sick is too sick to go to work. Plus, our email challenge, have you ever overplayed a cold into a sick day or a sick week? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.